Welcome, everybody, to the Zones Women of Technology podcast. My name is Julie Wagner, and I am your host today. Today's podcast is being sponsored by Microsoft, a longtime trusted partner of Zones. Well, welcome back to the Zones Women of Technology podcast. Today is one of my favorite podcasts of the year. It is our year-end wrap-up. So what I like to do, and I did this last year, so I hope that it becomes a tradition from here on out. But what I did was I went through all of the podcasts that were recorded this year, and I took the feedback that had been given to me by our listeners. I was able to go through these podcasts and choose the most impactful parts of the conversations that we had. And then I'm putting them all in one podcast for you today. So first, we're going to start off with Dawn Hanks. She and I had a really fantastic conversation earlier in the year. So I would highly encourage you to go listen to the full podcast. But today, the portion that I picked out, we were actually talking about privilege, especially as women in technology. If you're a leader in technology, these are the kind of things we need to have in the forefront of our minds. So with that being said, here we go. Really fantastic and eye-opening subject. So I'd like to talk about that right now with you.
Sure. You know, when we originally talked about subject matters to discuss, we talked about purpose and passion and how to go after your purpose and how to live out your passions or work in your passions. And the thing that I wanted to point out is that even being able to say those sentences is a privilege. There are people all over the world that are working to work, and they don't have any other choice to do that. So talking about purpose and passion is a privilege in and of itself. That doesn't mean that we should assume that it is bad. It doesn't mean that we should have guilt around it, which a lot of people do. You know, the word privileged is used a lot in the lexicon these days, and oftentimes it has a negative connotation to it, and people are afraid to embrace that privilege. But the more of us that can embrace privilege and use it to help other people, then the more that privilege gets spread out amongst other people. Working in your purpose and working in your passion is a conversation that not everybody has to have. And if you are a person who is able to have it, then it is incumbent on you to use that and to follow it and to go after it and do it for the people who can't do it.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. You had a note on here that purpose and passion is not a destination, it's a journey. Let's talk about that. I think that's something that our listeners will really want to listen to and hear.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I say purpose and passion is not a destination, it's a journey. It's because I am a person who searched my entire life for my purpose or to find a passion. If you were to ask anybody in my history or in my background, whether it be a teacher or a employer, people will tell you I was passionate about everything. Like, I worked in prescription eyewear for a number of years, and people were like, "You're so passionate about prescription eyewear." And that couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, I want people to protect their eyes. If you protect your eyes, you protect your overall health. I truly believe that. But what for me it was about learning new things and becoming skilled in new things. And whatever it was that I was focused on that time became my passion, right? But the truth of the matter is I read every book about purpose. I read every self-help book you could possibly imagine on how to find your passion and what your thing is. And there's even a little folklore in my family where I would cry to my mom about finding my passion or what I'm good at or what my talent was. And I have 5 brothers and sisters, and each one of them is so uniquely gifted and talented. And I would cry to my mom and say, "Why are they talented and I don't have a talent?" And my mom would say, "Your talent is business." And I'd be like, "Mom, that's not a talent. What are you talking about?" And I'd just be so upset about it. And the thing is we look at talent and we look at purpose and we look at passion and we try to identify them in a really old-fashioned way. For example, we don't We don't talk about what we love to do. We don't talk about what we like to do. We don't talk about what we're good at. We just ask our kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? And we start asking them this when they're 5 and 6 years old, when they have no concept of where their talents and skill sets lie, where they have no concept what they like beyond Legos, right? And you hear these kids talk about it, and they'll tell you they want to be a police officer, a fireman, an astronaut, a ballerina, you know, all of these different things, a veterinarian, because it's limited to what they see in their universe at 5 and 6 years old. But there's this old LinkedIn survey that asked adults what they wanted to be when they grew up as kids. And the top 10 answers were some of those careers I just listed: veterinarian, astronaut, policeman, fireman, actor, singer, ballet dancer. And then they asked the adults, what percentage of you actually do what you wanted to do when you were a kid? And the percentage was 8.9%.
And that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, it's really, really low, right? And part of that is because we're asking questions of a kid who doesn't have a worldview yet, right? Or their worldview is very limited. But part of that, I also think, is that we idealize jobs based on a perception of what they are. And people go after a job instead of people going after a purpose or a passion. Instead, we should be asking kids what they love to do. What makes them happy? What do they lose time doing? One of the things I ask in interviews of every single person that I interview is that exact question. If you are in the middle of the day and 4 hours have passed up and you look at the clock and it feels like only 4 minutes have passed, what were you doing? What did you lose time doing because you loved doing it so much or you were so lost in the concept of it? And a lot of times those aren't jobs. Those are things like talking, drawing, reading. There are activities that we do, there are hobbies that we do. But so often, it's not that difficult to turn a hobby into a career. I can use myself as an example. In my baby book, it says that I started talking at 6 months old. Now, the average baby starts talking in sentences at 18 months to 2 years. I was saying sentences at 6 months old, according to my mother. Now, all mothers exaggerate about their kids because they think they're fantastic and above anybody else. So who knows the reality of this, right? But it is physically written in my baby book that I was talking at 6 months of age. Every single report card I ever had said, you know, she loves to talk. She's got a good energy to her. She loves to make friends. She's a leader. Every single report card ever said that. A lot of them also said she should stop talking so much. So I got to be honest and give the good side and the bad side. But nobody says you're a good talker. Let's talk about what you can do in the future around talking. And I never knew that either. If you had told me I needed to speak in front of a room full of people, I cried. The first time I got on stage, I was shaking so hard and I cried on the stage in front of 800 people in a room. And everybody knew it, and everybody was so kind to me afterwards because they could feel my energy and so forth. But less than 3 years later, I became a public speaker. And it wasn't because I wanted to, it's because I found what I was passionate about speaking about. And all of a sudden, I looked at my history, at every job I had ever said I wanted to be, a lawyer, a journalist, a teacher, an actress, a singer. It all had to do with expressing myself and expressing my opinions and speaking into the universe. There's so many careers that you can do that for. And I think that if we start talking to our kids, to our teenagers, and even to adults about what they actually enjoy doing, what helps them lose time, what gets them excited, though, that's the conversation that we need to be having. And then you can still be a marketer. You can still be someone in sales. You can still be someone in IT, and you can be someone in finance, but you're leveraging your skill sets to do that job at a higher level and be more productive.
So just a few months ago, I had the incredible opportunity to meet not one, but two of our counterparts over at Cisco. I got to chat with Jason McLaurin and Carla Rivera, and our conversation, we really looped it around intentional allyship and what that actually means. So take a listen.
So Carla, I really want to just dive right into our our first topic of discussion. We want to talk today about intentional allyship. And Carla, what does intentional allyship mean?
Yeah, so absolutely great question. Love this topic. So I'm going to be a little bit verbose on this one. It's a fantastic question. It's important to understand the difference between mentors, sponsors, and allies, and how to utilize them, right? So as women and building your board. So especially the fact that women are actually leaving the tech industry at 45% higher rate than men. Those are staggering numbers, of course. An increase in support will help that attrition. So everyone should have their own personal board. So of allies, sponsors, coaches, and mentors. And first and foremost, let's address what allies are, right? Before we even go into intentional allies. So they address the bias against women at work and have really brave conversations about topics such as equal pay, equitable rights of hiring and promotion. So these are typically men or others that hold positions of power. They have influence, they have knowledge and resources to help support, the skills to really just help to support women and other marginalized communities. So this does have to do with the full spectrum of diversity. So an ally can also be a sponsor or a mentor. It's not a mutually exclusive role. Mentors or coaches, they focus on the skills, the attributes that you're trying to learn, something that you'd like to help, you'd like to develop it within yourself. And then mentors and allies can actually, again, they can turn into sponsors. Sponsors really vouch for you. They vouch for your character, your reputation, your skills, and they're there for you in times of trouble. Usually sponsors know you for about a year. And so this relation shouldn't be taken lightly. As you can see, they're literally vouching for you, right? Interchanging mentors and sponsors and, is probably not a good thing. We really need to delineate who's a sponsor, who's a mentor on your board. So again, all the roles have helped to continue to support me in my career journey. And the reality is that sponsors and allies and mentors, they all change over time. You'll know who really steps up as intentionally, right, in any of those roles. When you're going through a promotion or someone is trying to varnish a reputation, God forbid, hopefully aligning you with opportunities. So I've had many that step up and unexpectedly some that don't. And that's okay. On your board, it changes over time. It's an ebbs and flows. And your board is mutually beneficial relationship. So during a time span, you're connecting and but they may drop off. And again, that's okay, right? The mutual benefit as well is also just giving back to them some of your history and experience and possibly proximity, your diverse point of view. So an interesting point in 2021, McKinsey did a study that showed that diversity, equity, and inclusion, that I'll use DE&I, as we all know. So these activities are actually falling mostly on women's plates in corporate America. So even though all these companies are pushing for DE&I, the job of actually recruiting and supporting diverse talent is largely falling to women in addition to their regular workloads, with little and no recognition of the time or commitments that they take. So even though we're exhausted, approximately 20% of senior women leaders report spending substantial amount of time on DE&I work that is not central to their job. So versus the 10% of men at the same level. And another interesting bit of information is that, another study showed that white male employees are more likely this year to say that they're showing up as allies. And, on the face of it, that's good, but they're no more likely to be showing up as allies and taking that action of allyship. So there's just a really big gap between intent and action when it comes to allyship. And so I urge allies to be intentional. So as we need allies as women, I'm Latina and Afro-Caribbean mix. And so underrepresented communities, we really need those allies as well to make this change together. We can't do it without our allies. So, gain those intentional allies, but also consider being an ally to others. I think it's very important that we have to also be that to others. So it's really critical for women to find those intentional allies, as I said, and build that board. Intentional allies and using the board is actually a result of my last few promotions and this recent expanded responsibility. So I really wanted to bring Jason McLaurin on for this conversation, as he truly is an intentional ally.
So how do you think that your global experience has led you to become a better ally for women in tech?
I think there are a couple aspects of globally. I think one, maybe some lessons to other potential allies out there, is one, it helped me be in the right place myself. Because mm-hmm. I think to be an ally, you've got to be in the right place and really believe it in the core of who you are. Again, not something you can turn off and on. And being in Asia and seeing some of the unique experiences around the world helped me with that. Another thing with being in Asia is there's two things I'll share. One is I was on a subway in Bangkok one time, and there was a sign in the train, and the sign said, if you ever want to learn your country, leave for 10 years. And it was very interesting, because it's like, ever get one of those fortune cookies, you go to a Chinese restaurant, you get a fortune cookie, and you save it. It's like, oh, this is it, you save it forever. This has been my fortune cookie forever. Because it reinforced to me that after being gone for a long time and looking back, you learn a lot about yourself, not only your country, but yourself in the world. And to me, that means get outside your comfort zone, step aside outside your comfort zone and look back at yourself. And through this 15 years of being overseas, I've really become comfortable being in situations that are initially uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And that's allowed me to step into situations and again, get proximate with individuals and learn their value and the innovation they bring. And the other last thing I'll say about working globally is that you learn quickly that there are two types of companies that do business globally. Some that see the world as purely a source of profit. They go to India or Brazil or wherever it is, and they set up a company and they sell and they take their profits and they go away. And there are others, and thankfully Cisco is one of them, that see the world as a source of innovation. And they see that value and diversity, and they see the value of what an Indian can bring and what a Chinese can bring and what a Brazilian can bring. They say that's innovation. They bring that value. It's more valuable than the pure money they bring out of the country. And that's one of the kind of philosophies of tennis that stuck with me for the last probably 10 or 15 years is try to be that company, be that person. And so there's a few takeaways from me.
So just last month, I had Maheen Mirza over from Dell join me on the podcast, and I had a lot of people reach out to me about how incredible this podcast was. One of the most talked about subjects was when Maheen was talking about how functional responsibility trumps titles. So with that being said, here is a few minute portion of it. I hope you enjoy it. Again, you can catch up on this past podcast. This was just last month in November of 2022. So take some time, take half an hour and listen to it when you're ready. But until then, here is a little clip for you.
Let's talk about functional responsibility, how it trumps titles. Let's talk about that, because I think that's a great segue to move in there. So, just go ahead. Yeah,
sure. So, when I was introducing myself earlier, I talked about on how after graduating, my husband, Rabol, and I started our own company. We graduated during the dot-com era. So we started an online company that was actually competing with Amazon when Amazon was still a bookstore. So Toys R Us, if some of you guys remember, it was there right then. Toys R Us did not have an online presence. We were an online baby and a toy product. We were 22 and 25 at that point, so extremely young, had a really good concept, My husband was a computer engineering undergrad, so he basically created the software from scratch. We met with some people. We did all angel investor money for starting up the company. We met with some people who were much more seasoned, got to hear from them about all the things that we were doing wrong. We just decided that we're just going to do it by ourselves and see how it happens or it doesn't happen. Learned a lot, successfully learned that company, ran that company for about 3 years, learned codependency in a company for everything, from customer service to vendor relationships to sales, and really learned work ethic and the fact that no job is really beneath anyone and you have to wear multiple hats at any given time. I think everything that I learned in that job, even though, you know, I mean, like I said, we ran it for 3 years and then we had to fold it down and go out and get real jobs. Everything that I learned there is still what guides me in my workplace today. That's one of the reasons that I said, you know, a title is not necessarily that important. A title is more important for building credibility when you're going externally into the company, but especially when you're internal, it becomes more or less meaningless, and it becomes about the functional responsibility of the job that we are trying to do. Respect is what is important. So if you're a project manager who's basically running a different project and you have a manager, a director, a senior director, VP, SVP in the room, you are effectively running the show, and the different people in that meeting are there to do what you're delegating out to them in order to get the job done. I go back to respect is what is more important. Delegation is what is more important, and the end goal of what you're trying to achieve is more important. So it trumps the functional responsibility, trumps title at any given point. I'm glad that I work for a company where they think the same way, right? Dell has so many people in the organization and so many different business units, but we have very open lines to communication. No one ever stops you from calling anyone, even Michael Dell for that matter. Obviously, I haven't tried that, but if you wanted to, Michael Dell is very accessible in different meetings that you might be in or different conferences, and he'll come and walk the floor and come and talk to you. So everybody is very accessible. And I think any well-balanced company functions in the same way. Companies that function more on a hierarchy of titles are thinking very short-term and not necessarily long-term success.
Earlier this year, I had the chance to chat with Lorena Lofenholz. She's over with Microsoft, and we were talking about self-worth, self-esteem, and confidence, and how to bring that into the workplace. So with that being said, here's a few-minute clip. I hope you enjoy.
Okay, so Lorena, we were talking about self-worth and confidence, and really finding that in yourself and bringing that into the workplace, right? So what would you recommend? What are some steps or some suggestions you would suggest to our listeners today on how to hone in and find that self-confidence and that self-worth?
Yeah, that is a great question, Julie. I think one of the things I would recommend first is just understanding that what you're feeling is not uncommon. Like, what you're feeling is something that many feel. And the trick to this is to understanding that often when you're feeling that lack of confidence in the workplace, often comes from a place of feeling stagnant, feeling like you're not growing, you're not learning, and you're not able to evolve. And so it's really about finding, you know, what are those missing links that are going to take you from feeling like you're doing something that you're passionate about? Because I will tell you, when you align folks to doing what they do best and what they love to do, that is when you start seeing that confidence shine. And so overall, you want to just make sure you're almost understanding what it is that you're looking for. Do a little bit of a self-evaluation. What are you doing that you absolutely hate? What are you doing that you love? And how can you maximize and learn in those areas that you love even more?
That is so true. I think when you have that mindset too, is when you're doing something you love, it's not a job, right? It's a career. It's part of your lifestyle versus, oh yeah, I'm going to my job. I don't know about you, but I hear that all the time too. Like I believe it. I live it, right? I'm in sales. Like my job is a sales manager in sales. It doesn't matter the kind of sales at the end of the day. I thrive on selling. I thrive on leading my team, and I thrive on it. So it's definitely one of those, you know, do you love what you do? I love that.
I think that's spot on, Julie, because I'll tell you why. Like, I've come from a place of being in sales roles as well. And, you know, one could say that many salespeople are very disorganized, right? But I had this passion around selling, and I realized, hey, if I learned more and amped up some of my organizational skills, I'm going to be a much better seller, right? And so I spent some time to, like, focus in on some of the things that would help me and certain areas to make me even better. And I'm talking like 10 years ago, right? But this is something that, like, if you can connect the dots on things, like, it's not this like horrible task anymore, right? Then you're kind of focusing more on, hey, this is a part of my overall plan. I want to be here in 1 year or 5 years. And this is a part of the steps I need to take in order to get to that goal.
That's good. I can personally attest that I've seen her organizational skills, and I shed a tear of joy when I saw her SharePoint.
In this little clip of the podcast I'm going to be sharing with you, I was chatting with Sarah Halstead. She is from Lenovo. And what we were doing was talking about championing different voices within your organization and how to do that. So this was actually a really thought-provoking conversation. So again, I'm going to highly recommend you go listen to it. And then, you know, enjoy. So
let me ask you this question. If you are talking to a leader who has a team, or a, you know, a CEO that has a company that's smaller and maybe they're building up and they're finding that it's hard to find those different perspectives and the voices and even the talents within a team, what would be your advice to them, or something you would challenge them with to help overcome that, to help get past that and grow?
Great question. I think so. This is kind of a flaw in the human system that I've seen anyways. And oftentimes leaders that get into positions, I was going to say new leaders that get into positions, but I've seen some really tenured leaders that do this exact same thing, and they want to hire people like themselves, right? Because we like to see the best in ourselves. We think we're the answer all the time. And it's a flaw in our thinking to think that people like us will produce the best results. And I'm not saying that people like us can't produce great results, but it doesn't lend towards that the team. How do I want to phrase this? It doesn't lend towards good teamwork necessarily, because if you get people that are too similar, they tend to conflict, they tend to compete rather than collaborate. Mm-hmm. I would say the best way to approach this that I have done in my past is actually to get somebody that I know, or another leader that I know has a different perspective than me, and have them in the interviewing process. And I know that might take time out of their day, but I offer the same back to them to say, hey, will you be also, I'm willing to be in your interviews to kind of check biases. Will you be in mine? And I think that by doing that, it really helps break those biases, especially with smaller companies that might not have like a really rigorous interview process. When I went through the interview process with Lenovo, for example, I met with, I don't know, 5-6 different people that were all interviewing me, asking me questions, how would I deal with them in their current roles? And I think that that's a way to help kind of break those biases that a manager might have and really take to heart what those other people are saying in the interview process and the feedback that they're giving for the candidate. So that's what I would say in terms of hiring new people. And then when it comes to just listening to your team, if they're bringing different perspectives, I think that we have oftentimes, especially in the technology industry, and I can imagine probably other industries, we have this fear of failure, right? That failure is bad. If something doesn't work, it is a black mark against us. When I truly believe that as long as you go into it thoughtfully, as long as you understand the target, and as long as you're taking calculated risks, that failure is not always, in fact, sometimes failure in certain things can actually teach us more than winning because, and this is another concept in the book, Think Again, because if we're just winning all the time, we're playing it way too safe. And then also not understanding what opportunities we could be missing by only focusing on what we know works. So
that's true. Playing it safe is it's so easy to fall into that too. I think so everybody can just so easily fall into the play it safe role. And when we get there, I like to talk a lot about being uncomfortable because growth comes from the uncomfortable. So when you fall back into those habits and stuff, you're not growing. And if you're not growing, you know, what's the point?
You're regressing. Absolutely. Most people aren't static. You're either moving forward or you're moving backward. Really.
Exactly.
So, I'm a big believer in challenging yourself, in accepting and even celebrating failures in a way, because it allows us to gain perspectives that we wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, fail forward, right? Just absolutely fail forward. You know, you might take two steps forward and then one step back, or even three steps back. But mm-hmm. in that failure, you're learning and you're growing, and as long as you continue to have that positive mindset and you want to have that learning mindset as well, you'll be able to grow from it and then continue to move forward. So yeah, I love talking about failure. I know it's a weird topic to talk about and it makes people uncomfortable, but we've got to talk about it. You know, how many times did Bill Gates fail?
100%.
Exactly.
And Thomas Edison always comes to mind when failure happens, because how many times did he try, right? And just failed at things. So
exactly. Got to fail so you can learn.
But some great successes. Look at their successes, right?
So last but not least, I had the honor to interview our brand new VP and GM of marketing over here at Zones. Her name is Liz Fuller, and we were talking about imposter syndrome. It was just a real authentic conversation. Nothing was scripted. Nothing was pre-planned out. It was just a real honest heart to heart. So I hope you guys enjoy this. Again, if you want to catch up on this past podcast, it is my interview with Liz Fuller from earlier this year, and you can find it on Spotify and Apple Music.
So let's unpack a little bit more about imposter syndrome and how it can inhibit your growth in not only in your job, but also in your, I think it also ties in really deeply with your personal life. Let's talk about that a little bit, because you are very passionate about it. And I love that, which is great.
I am. We talk about, and so as I mentioned, I have my own podcast, and so we talk about it all the time. It constantly comes up, even in topics we didn't think it would come up in. It's something that just permeates every aspect of our being. And if you are somebody who's susceptible to it, it can knock you down pretty hard. And really finding ways And I'm one of those people. So I'm high anxiety. Generally by nature, I'm more introverted than extroverted. So these are things that probably work against me in my career, but then on top of it, feeding yourself all that negativity, there are going to be some down days. And it's really important that you understand yourself and what makes you feel that way, because you know, people can pursue mentorship, they can pursue coaching, but unless you can be a little bit more self-aware of what motivates you and what makes you feel these ways, it's hard to get help from other people. You have to be able to help yourself first. And so I know you talk a lot about mentorship. I'm a mentor. I have mentors. I see so much value in it, but I know for a fact that I need to mentor myself more than I do. And so one of the things I would encourage to listeners or just in general to women is try to find how you can be your own best ally. How, you know, stop being your own worst critic.
Yeah. We are our own worst critic.
Oh yeah. That we tell ourselves stories all the time, and they're usually horror stories. If we wrote them down, you would never want anyone reading those stories. Why do we tell ourselves stories we wouldn't want other people to read?
Well, that ties into why do we say those things to ourselves, but then we'll turn around and tell our children how wonderful and beautiful and amazing and empowered they are, but we're not letting those words speak to ourselves as well. Because let me tell you, those kids, they see us when we talk to ourselves.
Yeah,
you know,
they do. And they see us how we are when we're at our best, and they see us when we're at our worst, and they come up with the total sum. So it is important that it's okay. You're not perfect, and it's okay to show vulnerability in front of your kids, but it's part of, you know, to your point, you want to be able to encourage your kids in the same way you encourage yourself, or vice versa.
So with all that being said, thank you so much for an incredible 2022 Zones Women of Technology podcast. It has been an incredible honor to be on this journey with you guys for the last 2 years. My name is Julie Wagner. I am your host over here at Zones Women of Technology, and we'll see you next year.